With the primary election just over a week away, this morning, a conversation with former Jacksonville mayor and congressional candidate Alvin Brown. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a good weekend. We are always live on the radio during the week at 9 a.m. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, a conversation with former Mayor Alvin Brown. He is running against District 5 Congressman Al Lawson. Lawson was supposed to appear with Brown on this show today, but he canceled late last night, citing a scheduling conflict. Also, if you want to watch this program, go to our Facebook page and listen to the stream live. And we want your questions. Give us a call with your questions about this race for Alvin Brown. He is our only guest in studio right now at 549-2937. Then later, author Tim Gilmore on his latest book, Goat Island Hermit. Plus, Cole Pepper as the Jaguars hit the halfway point of the preseason, rolling against the Vikings over the weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, in 2011, he pulled off an upset when he became the first African-American to be elected mayor of Jacksonville and the first Democrat to win the seat in two decades. Now, Alvin Brown hopes to pull off another upset and knock off incumbent 5th District Congressman Al Lawson. Lawson, the Democrat who represents a district that encompasses both parts of Jacksonville and parts of Tallahassee. Of course, this was the seat formerly held by Corrine Brown. Now, Mr. Lawson was scheduled to appear on First Coast Connect with Mr. Brown this morning so that we could have both of the candidates debate the issues live right here in the studio. But late last night, a spokesperson for Congressman Lawson canceled his appearance, citing a scheduling conflict. So the time goes to the challenger, former mayor and candidate for Congress, Alvin Brown, joins us now in studio with more about this race. Thanks for being here and good morning to you.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Happy to be here. It's always good to see you.
Always good to see you. And here's our question to callers. What are your questions and comments about this campaign for Congress as we talk about the issues in this race with former Mayor Alvin Brown? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and let us know what you're thinking on our Facebook page as well. Okay, we're about a week out from the election, right? The only poll done in this race, according to the congressman's most recent mailing, shows Al Lawson with a 99% chance of winning this election and keeping his seat in Congress. The poll shows you 20 points down. So this is a David and Goliath battle, right? What's your strategy to overcome that deficit in the week that you have left to go in this race?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here with you, Melissa. Always good to be on your show. You know, we have a strong outpouring of support throughout the congressional 5th District. A lot of volunteers, a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. Running a grassroots campaign, which I'm very excited about. Have a lot of support from our friends in labor, including the Florida Education Association, Duval Teachers United, the AFL-CIO. We have over 30 local faith leaders supporting our candidacy, and former mayor of Jacksonville and good friend Jake Godbole, Maury DeCento, the former commissioner of Jacksonville Human Rights Commission, Hazel Gillis, the former chair of the Democratic Black Caucus, and Connie Hodges, you know, ran United Way, and Wayne Hogan. So we have a lot of people helping us all throughout the district, running a great campaign, focusing on the issues. I think we build it from the bottom up, and the only issue is on election day. And that's the most important poll when people go to the poll on August the 28th to vote for Alvin for Congress.
Why should the voters of this district, not just in Jacksonville, but over in Tallahassee, where Al Lawson has a lot of name recognition and a long history, why should they choose someone new over the incumbent?
Sure, that's a great question. You know, I believe at the end of the day, we got to focus on the issues. When it comes to education, they will have a member of Congress, Alvin for Congress, in Congress supporting our public schools and our teachers. We got to invest in our local public schools. We got to invest in our teachers. And Al Lawson doesn't support public schools. He's the only Democrat a Senate Democrat voted with then Jeb Bush for vouchers and drained
when
billions
of dollars.
When he
was in the Florida Senate, you mean?
When he was in the Florida Senate and voted for vouchers to drain billions of dollars from public education. So you'll have a champion for education. When it comes to the economy and jobs, he's represented those rural counties for over 30 years. And right now today, Melissa, Madison County has a poverty rate of 31%. Hamilton County has a poverty rate of almost 30%. Gadsden County, where he's from, the poverty rate is almost 21%, and the per capita income is $18,000. You need someone who understands how to work with people, bring jobs to those areas, put people back to work. I will fight and support the minimum wage of $15 an hour. That's the difference. He's been there for 30 years, and even in Leon County, Tallahassee, the poverty rate is 19%. Think about that.
It's 549-2937. What are your questions for former mayor, congressional candidate Alvin Brown? Congressman Al Lawson was scheduled to appear on this program this morning alongside Mr. Brown, but he canceled last night. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. Okay, as I look at the map of the district, of course, it encompasses a good part of Jacksonville's urban core. Then it snakes west along Florida's northern edge all the way over to Tallahassee. And you just pointed out some of the poverty rates in those counties. You talked about Congressman Lawson's track record in the state house and in the Florida Senate. But what would you say you're elected and say you pull off this upset? What types of legislation in Congress would you champion to it sounds as though tack more toward the progressive wing of the Democratic Party on these issues? Would you caucus with the more progressive Democrats because the Democratic Party is moving left on some of these issues, whereas Al Lawson is much more of a centrist or a conservative Democrat? When you were mayor, you were more known as a conservative Democrat. If you're elected to Congress, it sounds as though you'd be supporting much more progressive legislation.
You're absolutely right. Investing in rural America. I want to use my experience. I worked in the Clinton administration, and I ran a $4 billion economic development plan to put people back to work. So I would focus on, for example, Congressman Jim Clyburn has a legislation called the 10-20-30 plan, investing in urban and rural areas. And basically, Melissa, what that says is the federal government should set aside 10% of their resources where you have 20% of the population that has been dealing with persistent systemic poverty for over 30 years. So what that means is in areas like Leon County, Jefferson County, Baker County, Duval County, I will focus on direct federal investment to bring jobs to those areas, focus on infrastructure, rebuilding our roads, our bridges, our public schools, put people back to work. I did it at the federal level. I took $4 billion and leveraged it for $10 billion, putting people back to work, taking a very comprehensive, holistic approach to make sure we invest in all areas so people can reach their God-given potential. That's what I would do. Unlike Congressman Al Lawson hasn't done anything for those areas. He's represented those areas for 30 years. And as a member of Congress over the last 2 years, he hasn't done anything in terms of investing and rural areas, attracting industries to put people back to work.
You're saying he's championed no legislation that would...
I'm saying he hasn't done anything in Madison County when it comes to bringing jobs to Madison County, Hamilton County. I haven't seen it, period. And what I would do is focus on specific legislation and policy introduced in Congress that focus on areas that have been hit hard by systemic poverty. We're the richest nation on planet Earth, and there's no reason why we can't be proactive and pushing for economic opportunity for all.
We'll go to your calls in a moment for Alvin Brown at 549-2937. You grew up in poverty, in relative poverty. Is this personal for you?
Absolutely.
Tell me more about your childhood.
Well, you know, I was raised by a single mother who raised five kids, worked two jobs, instilled in me a sense of faith and hard work. And my mother didn't go to college, but she has a PhD in common sense. She knew the value of education. And I got my start at working at Winn-Dixie, 40, 50 hours a week, going to school in the daytime. And when I couldn't pay my tuition, And they wanted me to drop out of college. I went to Fran Kenny, who will be 101 years old today, this year.
Former president of JU.
Absolutely. And I said, Fran, I want to be somebody and I don't want to drop out. Please give me an opportunity. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm working hard. I'm a meat cutter at Winn-Dixie. Can you give me an opportunity? I'll pay you in 60 days. I don't want to drop out. I'll be the first in my family to go to college. And so she said, you know what? You go downstairs and register. You don't owe us a dime. Now, Fran didn't do that because I was well connected. She did it because she saw the potential in me and I was willing to work hard and play by the rules. And I'm thankful for people like that. And Jacksonville has given me a tremendous opportunity, not only in college, but everything I've been able to do in this city. I stand on the shoulders of so many people in Jacksonville and throughout Florida who fought for anyone can get a good quality education. Anyone should be able to go to college and make it happen. So for me personally, being raised by a single mom, and many people in this fifth congressional district are being raised by single women, and their grandmothers are raising their grandkids. And I know for a fact they work hard every day. They may not understand algebra, but they care about their kids. They love their kids, and they're going to have someone who will fight for them and be a champion for those who are hopeless, homeless, and living in poverty and despair. I have a track record on that, and I'm committed to that because it's personal.
Going beyond the issues, you mentioned the voter base in Jacksonville. There are more registered Democrats in Jacksonville than over in Tallahassee. Not many more, but more. I think it's something like 140,000 in Jacksonville compared to 114,000 in the Tallahassee part of the district. Your name recognition is in Jacksonville. Al Lawson's name recognition is much more so in Tallahassee. What is your strategy, I guess, to make up the deficit in the polls in these closing days? Because for you to pull off an upset, you will have to have massive voter turnout in Duval to pull off an upset against the incumbent who did not appear on this program this morning. For those that are just tuning in, we had hoped to have Congressman Lawson as well this morning. What's your strategy?
Well, I think we got a good game plan. We've been campaigning all weekend, you know, early voting started. And I think the partnership we had, the Democratic Party, is working hard to turn out the vote. I'm working with over 30 faith leaders that are pushing voters to go to the poll, a grassroots campaign. I'm doing the same thing I did when I ran before. You know, you got to communicate with the voters. You got to knock on doors. We have a good ground game. We're knocking on doors. We've called thousands of people. We've knocked on thousands of doors. And I think that's the key. But I'm running a grassroots campaign all throughout the district. I think at the end of the day, you got to push people. Just yesterday, I spoke at 7 houses of worship, urging people to go to the polls, vote early, vote for Alvin for Congress. That's what you got to do. You got to be out there pounding the pavement, having folks out there. We got a lot of volunteers pushing, and I think that's the key.
You've got dozens of local faith leaders in your corner. What would you say to critics of that, those endorsements in the sense that when you were mayor, it was perceived that those were some of the same faith leaders that were leaning on you not to support updating the city's human rights ordinance? That's an old issue that has come up in your current campaign.
Sure. What I would say to them is, you know, as a member of Congress, I think all Americans deserve to be treated equally and have access to the same opportunities. I believe no one should be discriminated against, bullied or face violence because of who they are and who they love. And as a member of Congress, I will fight for policies to ensure equal treatment that includes sexual orientation, gender identity, including policies like fair housing and employment non-discrimination. And the other thing that I would support is, you know, working and supporting legislation, joining the NAACP, the ACLU, Interfaith Alliance, and supporting Do No Harm Act. So I will fight for everyone. I'll be a voice for everyone.
Let's go to your calls now for former mayor, congressional candidate Alvin Brown. He is running against the incumbent North Florida Congressman, Democrat Al Lawson. The district stretches west from Jacksonville to Tallahassee after redistricting redrew the lines of this district, the seat formerly held by Corrine Brown, of course. We had hoped to have a debate this morning between Congressman Lawson and Mr. Brown. However, Congressman Lawson canceled late last night. 549-2937. Andy is in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Andy. Good morning.
I keep hearing the question, well, what can Alvin do to overcome the deficit? All he's got to do to overcome his deficit against Al Lawson is to just keep telling the truth. Alvin Brown is the best qualified man we've ever had run for Congress around here. He did a better job as mayor than Lenny or Delaney or Peyton. And I'm tired of people knocking him as being a poor mayor, because his only problem as mayor is the Republicans try to make him look bad all the time. And I just want to mention one of many reasons that I think the two of them are different. Alvin Brown understands the importance of undoing the gerrymandering of Florida. But Alvin Lawson has been part of the problem all along. Alvin Lawson has advocated the pro-Republican gerrymandering. And that's why I, as a former member of the legislature and as an activist here, that's why I absolutely endorse Alvin Brown. And I feel sure that despite the polls, he's going to win.
Okay, that's a former legislator and talk show host, Andy Johnson, calling in. Now, as many people know who've listened to Andy's show over the years, Andy is a Democrat, so it's not surprising he would support you. But going beyond Andy's comments, let's talk about gerrymandering in Florida. This district that you're running in is a gerrymandered district, like all of the districts in Florida. Despite the redistricting process, it's still gerrymandered. So we have this phenomenon in this state where the majority of the districts are drawn so as though to ensure a white Republican most of the time wins them. And then there are a few districts that are drawn that are majority Democrat and usually, but not always, majority African-American. And this process has ensured Republican control of Florida for the better part of 20 years. So you're running in a district that, even though it's not as gerrymandered as it was when Corrine Brown held it, it's still drawn in such a way that fair districts advocates would say it's not a fair process. So where do you stand on this issue? And, this is an issue that Congress wouldn't necessarily take up. But where do you stand on this? And how do you see this process playing out for candidates, not just like you, but others around the state?
Sure. I think that's why we got to elect a Democratic governor for Florida and really flip the legislature. We have Senator R.B. Gibson, who's working hard to elect Senate Democrats around the state. And we have a governor's race that everybody needs to go out and vote and make sure that we vote and get a Democratic in for governor and make sure that we elect state officials who would support the agenda to be fair. On the other hand, you got to elect a Democrat in Congress, and that's me. Al Lawson is part of the problem. He's voted with Republicans time and time again. When you think about it, he voted for Stand Your Ground with the blessing of the NRA. I think we need someone in Congress who's going to stand up and fight for those individuals who believe in opportunity for all. So he voted for Stand Your Ground. He voted for ICE. And I think you should reform ICE.
What do you mean he voted for ICE?
He supports the Trump agenda when it comes to immigration. And I disagree with that. I don't think no kid should be separated from their parents and put in cage and treated inhumanely. He supports that. He supports ICE. I am against ICE. I think it needs to be reformed. So you need someone.
How would you reform ICE?
I would make sure that at the end of the day, no kid is separated from their families. Period. When you think about it, I believe in enforcement. They have a job to do. But at the end of the day, treat people with respect. We're better than that as a nation. We don't need to be bullying mothers and grandmothers and families and taking away their kids.
Let me ask you as a follow-up. Right now, the Democrats are in the minority in Congress, mm-hmm. right? With Democrats energized in this primary cycle, there's a chance that the House of Representatives could flip to Democratic control. Your party would be in the majority. There will be calls upon members of Congress, should you become one, to impeach President Trump if the Democrats flip the House blue. Would you join in those calls?
Yes, I would join in those calls.
You think Donald Trump should be impeached?
Yes.
Why?
Because of his actions. Just think about how he's been leading this country. It is embarrassing that we have the leader of the free world running the way this country's being run, disrespecting women, disrespecting minorities, disrespecting the LGBT community. I mean, he doesn't respect anyone. It's all about him and not about the American people. Our leaders usually are visionary leaders who believe in opportunity for all, who will work with people. It's okay to be bipartisan. It's okay to work with Democrats and Republicans. I do it all the time. But you need someone who will stand up to the Trump administration. And Al Lawson has not stand up to the Trump administration when it comes to education. He met with Secretary Betsy DeVos in Tallahassee in a meeting, warmly welcoming her to Tallahassee to talk about her agenda to privatize public schools. So you need someone who's going to focus on the 5th Congressional District and stand up to Donald Trump.
Okay, so impeachment is a political process, certainly, not sure. A legal one. But it officially has to do with high crimes and misdemeanors. In your opinion, has Donald Trump committed high crimes?
You know what?
That's why Democrats are saying we must impeach this president. They see him as a criminal president, an illegitimate president. Do you share
it's
that view?
Crime.
What would he be impeached for?
It's a
the
crime.
Russia probe? Should there be indictments, more indictments coming down on that front?
That's happening every day. It's a crime to punish innocent kids and lock them up in cages. No one know where these children are. It's criminal. If you and I right now today walked out of this building, saw a group of kids, kidnapped them, put them in cages somewhere else in another county, and walked away, we would be held accountable, period. He needs to be held accountable.
You think for that issue alone?
That's just one in many.
What are the others?
I think the Russia probe.
Do you believe that Donald Trump was elected president with illegal interference from Russia?
I believe he was a part of the whole process.
You believe he knowingly participated in a collusion or coordination with Russia in the campaign?
Well, that's what they're saying.
Do you believe that to be true?
I think that there got to be some truth to it.
And so you would support impeachment on those grounds?
Many others.
And many others. Okay, let's go to some more calls for Alvin Brown, 549-2937. Jim is on the line from Leon County over in Tallahassee. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to ask about roads, bridges. I mean, I guess your call screener said infrastructure. It's bad, and it's getting worse. Is there something we can do about that? What is being done? Yeah, can you just talk about that for a minute?
Sure. I think we have to make a commitment to infrastructure in our roads and bridges. I think having a plan like the 10-20-30 plan to focus on areas that have been hit hard by poverty, systemic poverty, you can put a lot of people back to work, rebuild your infrastructure, particularly in public schools, really make it a priority, working with Congress in a bipartisan fashion to bring people together to say once and for all, let's put America back to work. Let's make sure that we secure our infrastructure. I think we can do it. You know, when I was the mayor of Jacksonville, we wanted to deepen the harbor. I brought everyone together, both locally, a delegation of business and civic leaders, congressional delegation, the state, and around the country to focus on not only just Jacksonville deepening the harbor, but other communities around the country, and made it about jobs and economic opportunity. I think that's what we have to do. We have to work together, focus on those things that we can do as Democrats and Republicans working together, period. I think that's how you get it done. And really be specific and deliberate about those investments. When I look at Madison County, Hamilton County, Gadsden County, Leon County, and Jefferson and Baker, you have a high rate of poverty in those areas. And the per capita income, for example, in Hamilton County is $15,000, just above $15,000. So really focusing in those areas, putting people back to work, which will allow us to attract industry when you have infrastructure. The beauty of it is you don't just have to focus on the urban areas, but you can focus on all areas and make it a national movement that you're just going to finally, once and for all, we're going to put people back to work. We're going to focus on our infrastructure. We want to make sure that we take a holistic approach to leverage taxpayer dollars, partner with the private sector to do that. And I think we can support small business and entrepreneurs and get it done.
549-2937. Pam in Jacksonville. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
I have a question. My question pertains to health care in the Jacksonville area. You know, health care costs are certainly rising, and we often think about it in terms of the family, but the family now is also being extended with elder care and in-home care, and many elders are not able to afford health care and medications. What can Congress do about this?
Health care, the Affordable Care Act, access to care, a big issue for Democrats. What about that?
Well, you know, when I was mayor, I had an opportunity to work with President Obama and his administration, brought Secretary Sebelius here, brought all the local stakeholders together, and opened up all the community centers so that people can enroll in the Affordable Care Act. I think it was a good first step. It needs to be improved. Its cost is too high. So I would support health care for all. I think at the end of the day, like I said, we're the richest nation.
So the Bernie Sanders position, essentially, Medicare for all, payer?
You have a House bill right now that speaks to health care for all. I think the Senate version and the House version, they'll come together and work together to get it done. Because, Melissa, we shouldn't have to choose and make a decision whether or not we're going to pay for our medical bills or pay for our rent or, you know, put food on the table. We are smart enough, we're wealthy enough to create an environment where everyone will have access to affordable health care. Unlike my opponent, who said when he was running the first time that health care was not an issue. In 2016.
What exactly did he say?
Well, he said that, you know, health care is not a big issue. We can just focus on community clinics. And I disagree with that. At that time, over 2 million people in Florida didn't have any health care and over 300,000 kids. Now we have the Affordable Care Act, and I think that's important, but we got to go a step further. I support health care for all.
And we would toss that back over to Al Lawson for his response. Unfortunately, he's not here this morning as we had hoped, but let's take a few more calls. Mark in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I just want to make a comment. When you asked Alvin Brown about the impeachment of Trump, it's fine if he wants to support that. But as an example, he used a crime of separating the children from their parents at the border. My understanding is those that were separated were ones that came in who were seeking asylum here. And as such, the rules were such that you could only hold kids for so long. And so in essence, it was a legal issue that came into play where it actually separated kids from their parents, not a criminal one. Those laws were on the books for I don't know how many years, and yes, Trump enforced those laws. But I guess my comment is to use that as an example of a crime seems to me just to be a little bit ignorant of what the actual law was.
Thanks, Mark.
I stand by what I said. I think no one, no kid, if we had people rounding up kids in this country, locking them up in cage, where no parents would know where their children are, we would be outraged. And I think as a nation, we can do better than that.
And I appreciate the call from Mark. He is correct that there were laws on the books.
Sure.
Throughout the Bush and the Obama administrations, the policy was, there was never a policy of separating young children from their parents as they crossed. Families were typically kept together, is my understanding
of
the situation.
Right.
But I appreciate that call from Mark. Let's get in a few more calls for Alvin Brown. A couple of tweets coming in. Here's one from Brian. I am grateful for your support of public schools, Alvin, for Congress. That's his Twitter handle. There is a dangerous drive for privatization of schools, prisons, and even the Postal Service. Here's a comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Kelvin writes, who does Mr. Brown support in the race for Florida governor?
I'm not engaged in...
You're not endorsing a candidate,
no,
or you don't have a favorite in that race?
I'm not endorsing any candidates in that race.
Okay. Yeah. Mark in Riverside. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, good morning. Alvin, hello. This is one of your supporters over here. I just wanted to say once again, you know, our friend Alvin is there and Al Lawson is not. And I think that speaks volumes to the commitment for this side and this important region of the District 5.
Okay, thanks for that call. It is a district with several distinct regions. You've got Jacksonville, Tallahassee, and the more rural counties in between. So as we've been discussing, it's a far-flung district, but thank you for that call. Let's go to Terry. Is it Terry on line one? Hi, Terry. Good morning. Terry, are you still there? Okay, give us a call back. Pam in Jacksonville. Pam, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. I was on before, so I'm not sure if my question got through or not, but I got cut off. My question is about health care and the burgeoning costs that families and seniors are experiencing. My question is, what can Congress do to lessen this burden and so all people are entitled to quality health care?
Okay. And you mentioned a minute ago that you support universal coverage. The Affordable Care Act, you support. It is still the law of the land, although it's been weakened under the Trump administration. Access to care, paying for care is still an issue for millions of people. So how would you in Congress work to better that situation?
I think we got to have health care for all. And I think that there's legislation in the Senate as well in the House that I would support. I think both sides of the aisle got to work together to make sure that we have health care in this country
but will not
bankrupt people.
But how is that even realistic in this climate? Both sides working together.
I think you have to start somewhere. You just can't say, oh, we will never get it done. We're better than that. And I will get up every day and go to work every day to make the case why we're better than that, that we have to really make sure we take care of our own. And that is making the investment in health care for all. We need to start. You have legislation in the Senate and the House, and I think they can come together to really put together a health care plan that we can live with. It's not going to happen overnight, but we got to start somewhere. Unlike my opponent, who has taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from the insurance company. And so at the end of the day,
And
I have not.
And that is because you don't think that they are on that page when it comes to reform?
Well, I think they are. I think you have to work with everyone, the healthcare providers, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies. I think we all got to work together to improve the quality of life for those who live not only in the 5th Congressional District, but around the country.
Okay. Normally, this is the point in the show when we would give both candidates their chance to make their closing argument to the voters. Only one candidate showed up. So, Mr. Brown, your closing argument to the voters of District 5.
Well, thank you again, Melissa, for hosting me today. I'm happy to be here. I will get up every day and work for the American people. You know, I'm running for Congress and I want your vote because I'm the most qualified candidate in the race who believes in opportunity for all. I have the experience. I know how Washington works. I will focus on public education. I would support teachers and make sure I think they should have a starting salary of $50,000 a year. We need to work together to make sure teachers are taken care of. My opponent does not. I believe in the economy that works for everyone. I will get up every day and make sure that no part of the district is left behind. So I want to focus on jobs and the economy. And then the Affordable Care Act, making sure we have health care for all. I want to be the voice for the voiceless, those who are helpless and homeless. I believe in opportunity for all. There is tremendous power when people work together around an issue that is clear, a cause that is just, and a purpose that is righteous. And that is a quote from Dr. King's youngest daughter, Bernice King. Dr. King died so we can have an opportunity to live the American dream. I'm going to vote for everyone in this district. Vote for Alvin Brown for Congress. Let's get out and vote. Let's make it happen. Together we can do better. Together we can improve the quality of life. Together we can create jobs for the jobless. Together we can create housing for the homeless. Together, by working together, we can make it happen. Thank you for listening to me. God bless you.
Alvin Brown, thank you for appearing on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Early voting is underway. The primary is August 28th. And much more still ahead. Later, the Jaguars beat the Vikings over the weekend. Cole Pepper has a look at how things are shaping up in this preseason. But up next, local author Tim Gilmore. We'll be right back.
WJCT's Jaguars Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space and indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311. or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Absentee ballots are out, early voting is open, and Election Day is around the corner. Republican and Democratic voters in Florida are greeted with a crowded ballot this primary election. The choices include races to be the state's top prosecutor, the attorney general, and Florida's top consumer protector, the agriculture commissioner. Hear from many of the candidates on Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 here on WJCT.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new novel from prolific local author Tim Gilmore, and he says Goat Island Hermit is pure swampland, cloak and dagger. Gilmore is having a book signing event later this week. We've got a preview right now here in studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And it feels like every other week or so you're out with a new book, which is just incredible. I know it's not that often, but
there's a lot of stories in this place.
You're telling them. So tell me about this story. The full title is Goat Island Hermit, the State of Florida versus Rollins Christopher.
Right. Well, you know, it's ironic that Rollins Christopher would even be in any kind of record because, you know, he lived on what's now Blunt Island, was at the time called Goat Island. There was no road to it. He had no electricity, you know, and he lived entirely, as we would say today, off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, the state of Florida, decided they wanted his island for the Florida barge canal that would go across the state and was, you know, people said that it would be like the Panama Canal, and people didn't even know that the canal authority still existed. In fact, the governor at the time, Leroy Collins, didn't even know that the canal authority still existed until it started rearing its head in the news. And then Duval County also said that they wanted Goat Island. So this squatter, this Goat Island hermit, finds himself in the middle of this battle for his mm-hmm. land and the question of whether or not it's even his land.
Yeah. So how did you hear of this story? How did you know about this?
I was there is a little island in the St. John's today called Goat Island.
Okay.
And I was curious about it and digging around about it, and I find all of these old newspaper articles from the 1950s referring to, you know, a different Goat Island, but it sounded like a fascinating, absolutely Florida kind of story, and sucked me in.
Okay. So in this story, there are threats of murder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me about that. It sounds like a juicy old Florida tale.
It is. It is. You know, people responded in lots of different ways to his story. Someone from Tampa actually sent a letter to a judge threatening him, telling him that if he didn't rescind his order for Rollins Christopher to leave Goat Island, that he would die by poison gas in his home. That's an actual quote from the letter. People wrote Congressman Charles Bennett and the governor and Malcolm Fortson, who was the head of the Florida Barge Canal Authority. And a lot of people actually took up his side and said, you know, well, if you have to take this island, can you find him another place and things like that. But, you know, it brought the whole state in a number of different ways. And it ended up in the Wall Street Journal. And it was
this became a national story.
Yeah.
And today, of course, Goat Island is known as Blunt Island. Jaxport owns the place.
Yes.
That's right. Where he was. That's where this guy was with his hundreds of goats.
Right.
And he would give people meat, goat meat, wouldn't
he? Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right across from New Berlin, which is still there. The rest of the Dames Point Peninsula is not like it used to be. There was a village called Dames Point, right where the Dames Point Bridge now rises. And, you know, New Berlin is really the only thing that's still there, and it's not the way it used to be either. It's hard to imagine that Jacksport won't swallow that up at some point as well.
Yeah, but going back literally less than 100 years, this whole area of Jacksonville was really as remote and primitive as you could get in the modern era, wasn't it? It was the swamp.
Yes. And it's fascinating to talk to a number of people who grew up back there and hear some of the stories. And you can't necessarily verify the stories, but you can say these are stories that exist in this place. And, you know, there are stories of there was a guy named Fred Nichols who had no legs. He had been injured in a train accident as a child. And three different people told me about Fred Nichols that he actually fashioned new legs out of car tires and must have been the strangest sight. But there's a number of characters. It was hard to live back there in that place.
Yeah.
And it's brutal. We forget how brutal Florida is when we have air conditioning, I think.
And people warned their kids, stay away from this strange guy raising goats on this island, this strange character. And they didn't know if he was Native American, African American. He was a mysterious figure in many ways, right?
He was a mysterious figure. You know, the Christopher family, which is one of the pioneer families in this area, and by some accounts, the largest and most diverse family, he claimed to be a Christopher. Some of the Christophers believed that he was. Some did not. But he did actually have a relationship with the Christophers at New Berlin. But when in his last years, he went to jail for a little bit. And there's some interesting anecdotes and records about that. But in his last years, he ended up living back on the Dames Point Peninsula. And that's when people, you know, told their kids to stay away from the strange man who lived in the shack in the woods back there.
And I guess to find out what happened to the goats, people are just going to have to come to your event because
yeah,
we're
go.
Almost out of time.
There you go.
You are holding a book signing and reading event this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Jacksonville Historical Society. They are right across the street from Veterans Memorial Arena, in between the arena and the football stadium. And people need to come out, meet you, and hear you read a little bit from this fascinating book. It's called Goat Island Hermit, The State of Florida versus Rollins Christopher, a special event from local author and professor Tim Gilmore. You can check out his website too, Jack's Psyche Go.
Jack Psycho Geo.
Jack yeah. Psycho Geo, pardon me, almost right, .com for more. And always a pleasure to see you. And I'm sure it's going to be another great one for you. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
A quick break, and in a moment, a look at the Jaguars preseason, the good, the bad, and some ugly up in Minnesota. Culpepper will have that right after this.
On the next Fresh Air.
So your family is, like, rich?
We're comfortable.
That is exactly what a super rich person would say.
Our guest will be Kevin Kwan, whose best-selling novel, Crazy Rich Asians, has been adapted into a new film. The story is inspired by his childhood in Singapore, surrounded by crazy rich families. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Whether we'll ever see a military parade or not, close to 3 million Americans have fought in Afghanistan and Iraq since 9/11. They are America's sons and daughters, wives and husbands, brothers and sisters. The award-winning reporter C.J. Chivers has been looking at the physical and emotional toll on those who've served and on their families. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
The Orange Brick Custom House, built in 1891, is one of the most recognizable buildings in Key West. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the Custom House, home of the Key West Museum of Art and History. We'll discuss the history of Hi-Li in Florida and food history in Miami. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
One particular neighborhood in Cleveland, Ohio, had it worse than most others during the financial crisis.
We were losing about two houses a day to foreclosure, the highest foreclosure rate in the entire United States.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. 10 years later, how rent to own could help bring that neighborhood back. That is next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, halfway through the preseason, the Jaguars show some good, some bad, and some ugly up in Minnesota.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper, just back from the frozen tundra of Minnesota, although it's probably pretty nice up there right now.
It was mid-80s for the most part during the day. A heat wave for those in Minnesota, as far as they were telling us. But
yeah,
it felt pretty good to me.
Sure.
The Jaguars, I think, as you mentioned, some good, some bad, some ugly. Let's just walk through it. The good, certainly, not just in the game on Saturday, but also in the two combined practices with the Vikings on Wednesday and Thursday. First team defense looks tremendous. Playing without Jalen Ramsey and Dante Fowler, who are suspended, and Tashawn Gibson, who close to kickoff, told Coach Doug Marrone, "Hey, I don't think I could push it today." Mm-hmm. So they held him out. So without three of their top 12 defensive players, the Jaguars still dominated Minnesota's first team, made Kirk Cousins, the $30 million quarterback for the Vikings, look like a guy who should be in the bargain bin. Just absolutely dominated when they're out there. The bad, well, let's talk about the starting offense. Not as bad as the bad last year in the preseason, I should point out. The floor is higher now, but they scored just one touchdown in the first half. And let's put some context to this. The Jaguars were missing two of their regular starting offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Then a third, Brandon Linder, went out with an injury, although it does not appear to be a serious one. That being said, you'd like to see more than a touchdown in a half if you're the Jaguars offense in the preseason. We'll certainly be looking for more than that on Saturday when the Falcons come to town. The ugly was 13 penalties for 140 yards. And I'll say this, some of the penalties are penalties that likely would not be called during the regular season last year. The new helmet rule that you can't lead with your helmet as a offensive or defensive player.
Uh-huh.
It's a big move towards safety, but I don't think that the officials really have gotten to the point where they really have a consensus on how tightly they're going to call that this year. My guess is that they're going to call it more tight in the preseason, and then as the year goes on, they may loosen that just a little bit because, you know, 13 penalties, you know, I think 11 of them in the first half is not the way to go for the Jaguars. And those penalties can really end, you know, if you have a great defensive game and you have issues with the penalty flags, that can really change a game in a hurry. So those are the sort of the big takeaways from the game on Saturday. So next up, the Jaguars face the Atlanta Falcons in the third and most important preseason game of the year. That'll be Saturday at the Bank.
The Bank.
And it's the most important preseason game, Melissa, because it's the one where the starters typically play deepest into the game in the preseason, probably going through, say, three quarters or so. And we'll see how the offense bounces back, and we'll see how the defense does with Jalen Ramsey and Dante Fowler both being reinstated today.
Let's talk about Jalen Ramsey and that interview he gave to GQ. Did you read that?
I did indeed.
Some trash talking, some interesting, colorful commentary, rating all the quarterbacks in the NFL, all that.
Jalen kind of is embracing this wrestling heel persona.
And there's the face and there's the heel.
Yeah, okay. and he's so obvious. And listen, he's a great defensive back. He might be the best cornerback in the National Football League. And in just his third year, he's a great player.
There are some who would ask whether he is putting more of a bullseye on the Jaguars as a result of that. And I actually like Blake Bortles' comment on this. He said, you know, if somebody needs to hear somebody else trash talk them in order to get motivated to play in the NFL, they probably have bigger problems. As a quarterback, Blake was asked, hey, have you ever had these kind of things said about you? By the Minnesota media asked him this, and he kind of laughed. He said,
all the time.
And you don't listen. You don't let it bother you. You go out there and keep doing it, which, to Blake's credit, I mean, he has certainly taken a lot of heat over the last couple of years, both locally and nationally, and he keeps on going out there
still
and
doing it.
Putting in the work. So, there's no doubt that Jalen Ramsey is a lightning rod for attention, both in the way he plays and the way he talks. And I don't think anything's going to change that. We'll see if he maybe tones it back just a touch after the suspension in terms of how he's interacting with local media. Still to be determined.
We will watch that. Meanwhile, some high school and college football. High school football over the weekend. College football just a couple weeks out
now. Yeah, college football less than 2 weeks away. Florida and Florida State still don't know who their quarterbacks will be. That's still a work in progress. Georgia took a big blow on one of their top recruits, a five-star running back named Zamir White, injured his knee over the weekend. He had an ACL injury in high school and now another one in college. So he will not be part of the solution to replace two running backs who were drafted in the top 35 in the NFL this past year. Of the three schools, Florida State has the toughest opener. They play Virginia Tech on Labor Day. As for high school football, in Georgia, it got underway this past Friday, and then it kicks off this week in Florida. Among the first games to be played, Mandarin at Atlantic Coast High School in the inaugural Bold City Showdown. These two schools have a great rivalry. Melissa, you may know they basically were split from one school when Mandarin got so big into two, and they've played for the Principal's Cup. This is an all-sport competition, so it's a great rivalry and a great history, although a fairly short one between these two schools, and nobody on the current Atlantic Coast roster has ever beaten Mandarin, so they're trying to end that string this year, and it's a game we're going to broadcast on Channel 4.
Very nice.
It'll be the first ever HD broadcast of a high school football game in Jacksonville, and looking forward to that on Thursday night at 7 o'clock.
How cool is that for those kids? It's come a long way since I was in high school, and you could watch the local high school game on public access TV.
Right. And that's, and at best, right? Sometimes it's on radio, sometimes nothing at all. But this is, we hope will be a tradition where we'll pick a big game to start the year and broadcast it. And the former St. Augustine head coach, Joey Wiles, is going to join me on the call as well. So he'll be able to lend his expertise.
Catch Cole there and every Monday on this show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that is our show. 1A's up next with an update on the Mueller probe. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. This is 89.9, and we'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Also, don't miss our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Have a wonderful Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.